challenge to stay within that. And if this were a typical Sunday, I would be wrestling today between returning to Numbers 12, which is where Miriam, as you know, becomes leprous because of her attempt to overthrow Moses. However, Aaron, her co-conspirator, does not become leprous, and that doesn't seem fair. Is it unfair that Aaron does not become leprous and only Miriam? No, of course, it's perfectly fair. It has to be. God is omniscient. Anyway, I would be wrestling with Miriam's leprosy, and I'd be comparing and contrasting it with Naaman and Gehazi of 2 Kings 5, because Naaman was leprous, and Gehazi becomes white like Miriam. So that is the obvious comparison in the Old Testament. Then we look at Miriam 7 days outside the camp and her restoration versus Gehazi's banishment and the curse on his descendants, which we covered briefly a couple of weeks ago. Or we could easily move laterally over to Joshua 3 and Joshua 4. That's where the Ark of the Covenant crosses the Jordan River, stands alone in a specific spot within the Jordan while the people go through and the waters are heaped up. And we could compare and contrast that with the leprosy of Naaman in 2 Kings 5 and the floating iron axe head of 2 Kings 6. Because why? Because it's the same spot. And here in 3 and 4 of Joshua, we have the sign of the 12 stones. And we'd contrast that with the leprous sign of Moses, his hand inside his bosom. And that, of course, is the key element to all of this stuff that I've just talked about. It's leprosy. What leprosy symbolizes and how it moves around in the Old Testament and what leprosy really is all about. And all of the aforementioned is connected by leprosy. And that, of course, leprosy is the first addressed, I believe, in Genesis 15 with the two birds, but mostly people would say Leviticus 14 or Exodus, whichever you wish to go. But the two birds of Genesis 15, which is how we get into Genesis 1 through 19 here, you've heard me say is perhaps the most difficult of the take-me's, which I've erased, by the way, as you can tell. It's the most difficult of the take-me's to interpret correctly. Anyway, if this were a typical Sunday, we would be somewhere amongst the tall grass of Joshua 3 and 4, or Numbers 12, or Matthew 3. What's Matthew 3 got to do with all this? Baptism of Christ, very good. Trying to add more pieces and fit them all together and wandering around and trying to find our way back to the two birds of Genesis 15. If this were a typical Sunday, but this is not a typical Sunday. As you are very much aware, this is a high religious holiday. This is Super Bowl Day. This is the least attended church service of the year. In the continental United States. In Alaska, it's not true. Up here, the least attended church service of the year is July, August, and September. I mean, Alaska doesn't have a bad church day. Alaska has 4-month blocks of bad church days. We have bad church months called bad sledding because last year wasn't really summer, was it? So, there's great pressure this morning on your humble professional pastor. A Super Bowl special sermon is pretty much mandatory. Kind of like Mother's Day. You got to have a special sermon on this day, and that's a lot of pressure for me. And I want to do it, you know, I want to conform, because I am, after all, a conformist. Everyone knows that. And I look at the specific, precise requirements for the special Super Bowl sermon. And number one, first and foremost, it's got to have a distinctive Super Bowl applicable title. Now, you notice, have you ever seen a title in the sermon or in the bulletin? We need to have more titles, which means we have to know what we're talking about in time for the person to do the bulletin. So we won't have more title. That won't happen. But the Super Bowl special sermon's got to have a distinctive Super Bowl applicable title. And it must be contemporary and seeker sensitive and user friendly because visitors pour into church. No, they don't. But they still tell you that you're supposed to have that. That's number two. Number three, the sermon's got to be filled with football references littered and abounding all throughout it. And four, the special Super Bowl sermon must be inspiring. It must be a winner. It must leave the congregation in a state of excitement, yelling and charging out of the church. And I was a coach in this city. Oh, my goodness, I'm still a coach in this city. My first game that I coached was a basketball game in 1971. And I haven't missed a season since of some kind. And I doubt that I'll miss one. I did kind of miss it last year, didn't I? I didn't. Yeah, that's true. It bothered me. But I have done many a halftime speech. I broke my right wrist at one. Or was it my left wrist? Can't remember. But I broke a table at the halftime of a basketball game yelling at Jerry Williams. And he comes by every now and then, and every time he comes by, he asks me how my wrist is. He's never forgotten it, neither have I. So I know how to do that, but it's still a lot of pressure. And that leads, by the way, to the final most important of the 5 points of the special Super Bowl sermon. The special Super Bowl sermon must be very, very short. They recommend 12 to 15 minutes. We're already in trouble. And there is a list. Those 5 items, as I looked at the list, there's a list I have never, ever, not even come close to fulfilling. Not one time in all the years I've done sermons have I got any of those 5 items there. And some of you will opine that I don't really make a serious attempt at it, which hurts my feelings, being that I am particularly sensitive and emotional and gentle and weepy by nature. And I have tried. You're wrong. Though it's well documented that I go often. Okay, I went once, twice maybe, to www.desperatepastor.com. Because you can go there. And you can sign up to Yes, you can. www.desperatepastor.com. Go look it up. And you can go there and give them $5 and you can steal Sunday sermons. Specifically Super Bowl sermons. I will promise you they advertise that at least 20% of the pastorate in the country is buying their material. And using it every Sunday. That's a guy that understands the nature of the church right there. He figured that out, didn't he? He's making a lot of money off these pastors. Anyway, there are special Super Bowl sermon titles, and I was thinking, well, I'll steal one of them. Why not? I didn't pay my money, because I'm cheap. But there was one like, "Are you kicking the winning field goal of life?" You've heard me do these before. Are you kicking the winning field goal of life? Or are you constantly getting your face smashed into the AstroTurf, nose broken, teeth swallowed, ruptured spleen? I added that second part. But that was a title. I could have bought that. I could have bought that sermon. We could be doing today, "Are you kicking the winning field?" My current favorite this year was, "Make Jesus your halfback and hand off your troubles." And I like that one because anytime you begin a sentence with "make Jesus," you are on very thin theological ice. You're about to drown. And so that was my current favorite. Making God do something is quite a challenge, meaning that he's omnipotent. But my second favorite of that group was "God seldom punts." And that cracked me up. Now, maybe that's just my humor. God seldom punts? The title is a punt, if you think about it. When exactly did God punt? Because if he seldom punts, then that means he must have punted. So where? I want to know. Now, I know that you're all anticipating my title of the special Super Bowl sermon. And I thought long and hard. It wasn't easy. I didn't steal one. I thought of my own. And it should be obvious that I hear soon that I thought long and hard, hours of deep reflection. And I decided, keeping in mind the 5 points, especially the one about being uplifting and inspiring, and I had to keep that one going. Short wasn't going to happen. But uplifting and inspiring and seeker-sensitive and contemporary and all of that. So here it goes. The title of the special Super Bowl sermon. Where's Eric? Can I have a drum roll on the table? I need a trumpet player. Louder. You never play loud enough. I know. I need the trumpet player. Okay, here it goes. Here's the title. This isn't the game. We're all losers. Figure it out in fear and trembling or perish in your sin. There. Look how inspired you are. Look how uplifted you are. It's perfect. My subtitle is, did you really think a leprous, hideous, filthy, blind, wicked, lame, dying, hopeless sinner was the point of all of this? It's not about you. It's not about us. It's not about me. It's not about them. It's about him. Duh. And there it is. Okay, so where do we go for our special Super Bowl sermon title? Well, naturally, Joshua 3 and 4, the sign of the 12 stones. I am going to solve for you, if you'll think a little bit, the sign of the 12 stones. So we're going to start at Joshua 3, 14, and this is going to be a long read, but it's worth it. Very important, Joshua 3 and 4. Hidden in Joshua 3 and 4 are lots of answers, and that's why they'd be so important to know. In fact, I will tell you that you need to know the sign, 2 things today we're going to talk about. Moses and Zipporah, you've got to understand Moses and Zipporah, and you must understand the sign of the 12 stones. Okay? So here we are, Joshua 3:14. I'm going to read it really fast, so open your books, follow along. So it was, when the people set out from their camp to cross over the Jordan with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people. So in other words, where's the Ark? It's in front. And as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark, you getting the drift here? They're carrying the Ark. Dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows all its banks during the whole time of the harvest. At this time, the evidence is that the Jordan River was not the small little creek that it is now, but it was at least a mile in width at this particular time. It still gets pretty wide, but not like it used to. That the waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. So the waters that went down into the sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, that's the Dead Sea, failed and were cut off. And the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Then the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. And it came to pass when all the people, how many of the people? All the people. When God starts repeating things like that, pay attention. And it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan that the Lord spoke to Joshua saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, 1 man from every tribe, and command them saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the midst or out of the middle of the Jordan from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. So where they stopped, in the middle of the Jordan River, go there and get 12 stones. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight. Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the tribe or from the children of Israel, 1 man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan. And each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder. How big a rock they bringing back? Big rock. According to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign. Very important. Sign of the 12 stones. Well, I shouldn't mark on the board right yet because I'm going to have to make a list. When your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you're going to have an answer. How many of you have children? Don't raise your hand. How many of your children have asked you, what is the sign of the 12 stones? Good thing they haven't. Because you need to know it for the sake of your children. What do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Now some will argue that's for an age. We'll talk about that maybe next week. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, as the Lord had spoken to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there to this day. You following that? I got 12 stones one place. What do I got other way places? All right, how many stones I got? Wouldn't it be convenient today if there's only 22 stones, then we'd have what? We'd have a Super Bowl reference. And we got 24, and you can't. I guess I could add assistant coaches or something, but it didn't go to work. That's my football reference. That's my attempt at being contemporary. But you got something to figure out, don't you? I got 12 stones. Wait a minute. I got another 12 stones. How many stones I got here? So the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all Moses had commanded Joshua, and the people hurried. There's another football reference for today. I'm supposed to hurry. And crossed over. Why'd the people hurry? Well, you got to worry about the water a little bit, but they're hurrying because of why? Those guys are holding that thing in the middle there. And they're hurrying. Take pressure off of them. Okay? So what's the application today? Hurry out of here so the pastor can go get his chicken. Right. Very good. Very good. Then it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over, that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people, and the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh crossed over, armed before the children of Israel, as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, command the priests who bear the ark of the testimony to come up from the Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. That should mean something to you. And it came to pass, when the priests who bore the ark of the covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. Never Passover time marks. The 10th day of the first month is the exact day that Christ entered Jerusalem on the donkey, right? And the exact day that the Israelites were to bring in the lamb for the Passover. And they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. So what do you know now? I have 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan River, and I got 12 stones at Gilgal. And it's all what? The sign of the 12 stones. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea. Now, you know, in order to understand what happened at the Jordan River, you're going to have to study what happened at the Red Sea. when he dried up before us until we had crossed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Whew. I realize that was a lot. I was trying to figure out when I was putting this together what I could cut out. There was nothing I could cut out. All of it's got to be included. There's no place to divide it and still be able to rightfully interpret it. Immediately, as I tried to help you know, first, everyone should understand that I have two piles of 12 stones. I've got one in the middle of the river and one at Gilgal. One that is in the river at the place where the priest stood. And you, as you know, I believe this is the place where Naaman was dipped, where the iron axe head was floated, and exactly where Jesus Christ was baptized. I'll make my case at a later date, but you should know that that's where I have concluded. 12 stones are placed at that exact spot. God likes this spot. Obvious question is why. 12 other stones were set up at Gilgal about 5 miles into the promised land. Thus, I'm going to tell you there are two signs of what, there's two parts of one sign, or two signs that equal one sign. Does that make sense? I got a sign of the 12 stones in the middle of the river. I got a sign a mile and a quarter from Jericho at Gilgal, and they make one sign. Everybody with me there? Obvious question is why? Why do I have to have two towers of 12 stones in different spots? What's important about those spots? Obvious question number two, what's up with Gilgal, mile and a quarter from Jericho? I can kind of understand the middle of the Jordan River. Makes sense to me. Really easy. But why Gilgal? What do these two signs do? And you should be aware that those who spend a lot of time thinking about these sort of things have conclusions. Not necessarily answers, but certainly conclusions. What do you think they think the spot in the middle of the Jordan River is? Any ideas? Trees? Of course, he was crucified at Golgotha. Most would say that's the site of the tree of life, or the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or that's the Garden of Gethsemane. So if you take the trees out, then what's in the middle of the Jordan River? He likes the spot. Wants to be baptized there, if I'm right. Wants to cross the ark over there, if I'm right. Wants Naaman to be dipped there. Wants that axe head to be floated there. God loves that spot. What happened there? Creation of Adam? That's an interesting position. Number one view, slaying of the two lambs. Yeah? But look, who knows? You're on your own. You can do that while you're reading about Kurt Warner. The back of your bulletin, or doing that puzzle, which is very interesting. Did anybody figure out banana yet? Huh? Sort of a palindrome, yeah. Okay. Obvious question number three. What are the, and I'm kind of rewording this, what are the meanings of the two signs? What are different about them? What is the same? Obvious question number four. What is a sign anyway? What defines a sign? Why does he even have signs? Why does he call things signs? You know, every time Christ did a miracle that he called it a sign. Every single one of them. John calls them the seven signs. He picks seven of them out. Here's your sign. I got to do that. What is a sign? Thank you for laughing. It's hard. It's hard. And if you're going to laugh consistently at my stuff, what must you do? Sit in the front row to encourage me. That's exactly right. Okay, the best way to do this, believe it or not, I know this tears you to pieces, but we got to make a list. And when you look at your list, and it's a big list, when you look at your list, I hope things will leap out at you. First, the priests went first. They're first. They're carrying the ark. Okay? First thing they're doing. And that's very important, because why did they go first? Obviously, they're carrying the ark. The ark is a type of Christ, and what do you now know about that? Christ goes first. You watch him go. Because he goes first, what do you get to do? You get to go on dry land. That's right. So there you get that right off the bat, I hope. That's not in the lecture today. That's just for free. So you begin to think about, and they dip their feet. They dip their feet. They dip their feet. You all say back to me what? 2 Kings 5, don't you? Because of what? Dip. Very good. Now you're on the, bus. And if this is the first time you've ever been here, and there might be a couple of you, I think I see one or two, don't feel bad. They really don't know the answers. They're pretending to know. And that's okay. That's what we do here. The waters rose in a heap. Boy, now we got lots of problems. The waters rose in a heap, very much like the Red Sea, but different. Why is it different than the Red Sea? It's on a different day. The Red Sea is on the 18th day of the first month. This is on the 10th day of the first month. Why the difference? Some would say the 17th day of the first month for the Red Sea. But in any event, we got a 3 or 4 day difference. How come? One's on first fruits. The other is on what we call Palm Sunday, which, of course, is a mistake because it really is Palm Saturday. Wednesday crucifixion. There is no Good Friday. Sorry. Not really. Not really sorry. Okay. Far away at Adam. Far away at Adam. Adam is the beginning of the Jordan River, which you know is a symbol for death and judgment that goes down into the Dead Sea. Joshua 3.16, got to know your 3.16s. Joshua 3.16 is one of the big ones, along with John, along with Matthew, along with 1 Timothy. Anyway, remaining waters. What happened to the rest of the waters? I got a dam at Adam. I got water between Adam and where they crossed, and then I got water. I got three groups of water here. I got to know where my waters go. The remaining waters, what happened to them? Got to know that. It's a big question. All of this so you can do what? Explain to your children what is the meaning of the two pillars of 12 stones that make one sign of 12 stones, right? Okay, am I doing good? I am. Dry ground. How many times does he say dry ground? Bunch of times, I don't know. Dry ground, dry ground, dry ground, dry ground, dry ground, dry land. You getting the picture, EFG? Stay with me, cameraman. That's my favorite thing. Somebody knows what I'm talking about. ShamWow, that's right. You're like the cameraman. The camera cannot follow the soaking up of soda. Like it's so fast. Makes me laugh. All right. Midst, 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 midst. We got a bunch of mists and a bunch of dry land. He keeps emphasizing that it's dry land and it's in the midst. Dry land in the midst. Then he goes on to say, crossed over, crossed over, crossed over, crossed over on dry land in the midst. Over and over and over again. He wants you to know that they crossed over completely. They cross over. They crossed over. Bunch of crosses and a bunch of crosses. Oh, interesting. You ever wonder why he picked a cross? Never mind. Think about that while you're doing the puzzle in the bulletin and reading about Kurt Warner. H.I. could have been beheaded, right? Could have been hoisted up and hanged. But he wanted a cross. So come. Then I have 12 men. H.I.J. Then I have 12 stones. And that's my first 12 stones. And then I have the Jordan cut off, the Jordan cut off, the Jordan cut off. So I have the Jordan cut off as a memorial. Okay, hope you can read that. Probably you can't. You're going to have to memorize this whole list, test on Friday. Then the children ask... They're going to ask you, what's the meaning of the 12 stones in the middle of the river? And you're going to answer them, I hope. And that's your answer number one. And I used to have parents come to me all the time to ask me how to raise children. And I would tell them things like this. Mostly I'd start in creation evolution, but I would start eventually to get here. Can you explain the Passover to your kids? Do your kids have any idea what the meaning of the Passover is? Well, there's your problem. Fix that. Come see me later. If your children, I promise you, if your children understand the sign of the 12 stones or the sign of Jonah or the sign of the Passover or the sign of the feast days, sign of the Ark of the Covenant, the sign of the rainbow, they understand that, you got no problems with them. They'll be fine. I bring your kids in, ask them any of those questions, they know none of those answers. It's really pretty easy, this parenting stuff. Teach them Scripture. Hurry! I know, make him stop, I know. That day. Ooh, this is a big deal. God likes that day. There's a command. God, through Joshua, tells them to come up. The come up command. Come up from the midst of the Jordan is what Joshua says to them. And do it on the 10th day of the first month. And I got another 12 stones. 12 stones number two. And I got children asking again. Number two. So I got to have two answers. Answer number two is different from answer number one. What's different? One's in Gilgal, one's in the middle of the river. I have this relationship to the Red Sea, which tells me I'm talking about Passover again. All the peeps of the earth may know. So they know. You got to know the signs of the 12 stones. And the end of it is forever. Okay. There you go. There's your list. Hurry. Now, I'm hoping that the regulars here, and regulars is defined as those who have come once a month for 10 months. I'm hoping you regulars have already noticed the pattern in the relationships. You first and foremost, you got to know that puts you on a Passover pattern right there. I'm on a Passover pattern just like I am the 153 fish in the book of John, just like I am the book of John, just like I am the book of Revelation. I'm on a Passover pattern here. Hope you see that. I hope you see the references and the relationships and you found the prophecies and the person of Christ. In other words, the prophecies about Christ and the characteristics of his person. Because the purpose of the Old Testament, the purpose of the Old Testament is to find Christ, is to reveal Christ. If you want to know why the eldest son is stoned, because you get that all the time, if you want to know why you stoned the oldest son, how come you stoned the oldest son? Because somehow it teaches about Jesus Christ. If you don't find Christ when you read the Old Testament, you have failed. If you have a Christless Old Testament perspective, you have failed. So find Christ. Essentially, our list this morning is clues about who? Jesus Christ. So you have to find him in our list. If I don't have him there, then I've got a bad list. These identify the person of Christ or his redemptive work. And some of you have begun to notice that passages don't stand alone in Scripture. You talk to me now about it, and that's really exciting for me. Just as 2 Kings 5 must be melded together with 2 Kings 6, they form a unit, both together explain each one individually, they make a whole, so it is with Joshua 4 and Joshua 5. Look in your textbooks. What's Joshua 5 about? You can solve Joshua 4 by solving Joshua 5. What's Joshua 5 say? What did it say? Circumcision. So the special Super Bowl Sunday user-friendly, contemporary, seeker-sensitive sermon is about circumcision. How can you get any better than that, huh? Joshua 5 is the circumcision of the second generation. Circumcision. So I now know that I can't solve Joshua 4 unless I know about circumcision. And it just clears it all up. The sermon's over now. Run the Kentucky Fried Chicken. We're done. There it is. Thanks for coming. No? Okay. Without explaining Exodus 4:24 through 26, what's that? That's where Jesus Christ seizes Moses for the purpose of killing him. And he doesn't kill Moses because Zipporah circumcises Moses' son. And she says, you are a husband of blood because of circumcision to me. There's what she says. Without reviewing that, Exodus 4:24 through 26, except to say that that is where the sign of circumcision is explained. It is not a coincidence that I have the signs of the stones juxtaposition next to the sign of circumcision. The sign of circumcision is explained there in Exodus 4 with Zipporah, husband of blood, what it means, why it's the sign of the Abrahamic covenant, which is Genesis 12 and Genesis 15, right? Abrahamic covenant. Very important, Exodus 4, 24 through 26. If you don't understand the sign of circumcision, then most of the New Testament is going to just be a mystery to you right off the bat. But for today, I'm not going to explain it really like I always used to or like I have today. Just substitute Christ crucified for circumcision. Every time you see circumcision in the Bible, mentally put Christ crucified. Circumcision is the sign of Christ crucified. Husband of blood. Zipporah equals Israel. What is the stumbling block? The stumbling block for Zipporah was the circumcision of her son. What is the stumbling block for the nation of Israel? Christ crucified. 1 Corinthians 1:23. So they substitute. So Joshua 5, circumcision. Joshua 5 is about Christ crucified. There. Now we got. Joshua 4 must be about what? Is it the same? Or is it something that is naturally joined to Christ crucified? Now look back at the list. There is a key letter. Here's your chance to be a star. There's a key letter. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I don't have caffeine. Would you have noticed? There's a key. Get him off the caffeine. I know that's what you're saying. There's a key letter there. I have an O, I have an A, and I have a P. Huh? Well, we could keep going through them all. Eventually, we'll get one. Be prepared to, don't just shout them out. Be prepared to defend it. There's one that when you see circumcision, that one should come flying off at you. Which one? Well, go through your mind what takes place in circumcision. Don't share it with your neighbors. But go, okay. One of those is going to be circumcision. Which one is it? K. Yay, K. K it is. Who said K? Yay, yay, K. Yay. Hardly got any help, did you? Have you noticed I've been a little goofy lately in the last couple of three sermons? Most people like it. It's called staying up late. Actually, I'm not doing that. But yes, the answer is K, and I hope that solves it for you. If it doesn't, start looking at the rest of the list. Notice really quickly that if I wanted to talk about Naaman, okay? If I wanted to talk about Naaman and the axe head, where would I go? What letter would I pick then? I would pick P. Very good. Come up from the mist, right? Or I would pick dipped, okay? I would start looking at those. I would find anything that had anything to do with lost. Here I'd have the 12 stones in the midst of the river, right? Underneath the water that is still there. I would do that. You can see how you can connect this to 2 Kings 5 and 6 for those of you who think I don't plan these things. Okay? Now the question is, what is the New Testament complement of the two pillars of 12 stones that make one sign that are a what? What are they? They're a memorial. What is the New Testament complement where I have two pieces of one thing that's a memorial? What is it? Come on. You can do this. This is participatory today. Yes. Very good. Communion service. Bread and wine. Okay? Two pieces of one sign. The sign of communion. I hope, let me just mention this, I have Jordan cut off, I have circumcision cut off, I have a memorial, circumcision, a memorial, they're both signs, right? Got all that? I cut off with a flint knife, with a stone, I have stones. So, the New Testament complement, communion, two memorials, two signs. Do this as a memorial, a memoriam to me, the blood, the flesh, I'm going to say to you, equals the 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan and the 12 stones at Gilgal. That's what I'm going to tell you today. All that's left to do is define the symbol of communion and establish the purpose of Christ crucified and what connects communion to crucifixion. What does connect communion to crucifixion? What's the same about communion? What element in Christ crucified and what element in communion is the same? Blood, yes, blood. We're a religion of blood. We get told that all the time, you bloody Christians. And what do we say in response to that? Yeah, baby, that's what we are. Life is in the blood. Christ is life. So I'm going to say to you, repeat this, I'll do it again, blood, flesh, communion. Equals 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan and 12 stones at Gilgal. If I'm right, if you cede the point to me today, which one's which? Which one's the flesh? Which one's the blood? See? There it is. It's easy as cake. It's a piece of pie. Two 12 stones equals communion. Circumcision equals Christ crucified. Next week, we connect communion to crucifixion. When we do, we solve the sign of the 12 stones. How easy is that? Piece of cake. Okay. Here come the musicians. Did I do good? Did I get done quick? It just seemed quick, didn't it? Persevere. And I'll try to make the point so that you will ultimately what? Agree with me, yes. Actually, it is not mine, but you'll agree with the people who came before me. Let's rise and be dismissed.